Evening, everybody. Evening, Steve. No, you can't see me, but how are you?
Yeah, apologies. I had a meeting that went on until after half past five, and I didn't think I'd get there in time, so I do apologise.
Yeah, no worries at all. Okay, apologies for absence. Done.
Yeah, we've received apologies from Councillor Bailey.
Right, thank you very much. Any declarations of interest for this evening's meeting? Anybody? No, okay. Item 3, urgent business. Not aware of any urgent business for consideration at the meeting, because that's still the same. Item 4, questions from the public. We've had no questions from the public. Item 5, questions from members of the committee. We've had no questions from members of the committee. Item 6, minutes of last meeting. Everybody happy with the meeting? Any comments? Okay, I propose the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Could I have a seconder? Councillor Peters was first, I think. Thank you. All those in favour? Where you are. You read them well, obviously. Yeah, any abstentions there, sorry? Councillor Hadley, thank you. So the vote's carried. Item 7, internal audit update. Handing over to Ruby, who's going to do his oral update. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with, I haven't a verbal update from our last meeting. Since our last progress report to the committee, we've issued one draft report on the Stronger Towns Fund, and that's currently with management for agreement. That's with significant assurance. Just for members' information. We're also in the process of completing and undertaking fieldwork across a number of audits that were scheduled for quarter three. Some of those are nearing completion and the draft reports will be imminent in the next few weeks. We've also commenced stage one of the Heads Internal Audit Opinion and we're sort of progressing that work. We've also commenced planning the quarter four audits, which include the traditional financial and management and reporting and the revenues and benefits reviews. In terms of follow-up and recommendation tracking, the overall implementation rate has gone up to 67%, which is an improvement on last time, and we're continuing to monitor those overdue actions and those in progress. So every month I send out an action tracking report to the heads of service for any updates to make sure that we're capturing everything as we can. For November, I sent out the updates at the beginning of this week, and I have had some indicating that actions have been implemented, but I just need the evidence to validate those. As soon as that process concludes, that will be updated. There are currently 9 overdue actions, 2 of which are historic, one including the leisure contract monitoring review, with the leisure contract being signed. I have had an update to say that that contract is with the provider's managing director and it is expected to be signed by the end of December. So as soon as that progresses, that one can come off the system. The 3 actions in relation to car parking, I have been advised that there has been movement on that, but again, I have requested the evidence so that we can validate those. So it looks like there is progress being made. 1 revenues and 3 benefits actions have now become overdue as at the end of September. However, we are planning to do our annual review, so we'll pick those up. If we don't get any updates, we'll pick those up as part of our annual audits. And I'm happy to take any questions from members.
Thank you, Ruby. I know you had to do that fairly short notice as well, so I appreciate you doing it. Thank you. Colleagues, for questions? Oh. Okay, right. Thank you, Ruby. The Treasury report covers our Treasury management activity over the last 2 quarters. I invite our Interim Chief Accountant, James Hotwood, to give us an update.
Hello. So, This report presents the mid-year Treasury outturn. So 3 reports have to be brought to you. That's by regulation. So the first report that's already been seen is the Treasury Management Strategy. So that sets out what we plan to do for the current financial year for 23-24. This report, the mid-year, tells you what we have done for the first 6 months of the year, and then you'll get an outturn report which tells you what we've done for the whole year. So the purpose of bringing this report to the committee is for you to review it and scrutinise before it goes to full council. So in terms of definitions, treasury management is So in terms of definitions, treasury management is about managing cash flows. So specifically, the borrowings, the investments, and the cash balances that the authority has. What are the key outcomes that are required from that? So firstly, we need to manage the cash balances to make sure that we can pay suppliers and we can pay staff. We need to manage any borrowing, and the council only and can only borrow to finance long-term infrastructure investment. And we need to make sure that treasury management is conducted in terms of the right policies and procedures, and we need to make sure that investments are managed safely. So that's what the report is aiming to do. What it sets out is that all the treasury management activity has been carried out in accordance with the procedures that have been laid down, so have been carried out safely. It sets out that no borrowing was required during the first 6 months of the current financial year, and we don't intend to do any borrowing during 23-24. That's particularly useful at the moment because, as you'll be aware, borrowing costs are increasing. At the moment, we're not borrowing while interest rates are high, and we are also investing our surplus balances while investments are high. So that's all working to the advantage of the authority. The report also shows that we've reported that we've invested with all the agreed counterparties set out in the original treasury management policy. And it also shows that at 30th of September, the yield that we were expecting on our investments was just below the Bank of England rate of 5.21. And there's a benchmarking set of authorities, of district authorities, are around 80, and the council's come out significantly above average for that. So that's been a good result. The overriding objective is to keep the investment safe, for obvious reasons. The SIPFA guidelines set out the need to ensure that we've got enough cash, that we keep investment safe, but also that we manage yield as well. And so this is a good positive outcome. If you've seen the monitoring report for quarter two, you'll have seen at the moment we're currently reporting an underspend. And again, that's driven by the fact that the investment income, the interest income that we're getting, is higher than we budgeted. So it's driving other outcomes elsewhere in the council. Those are the main things. It's probably worth pointing out that the interest income that we're getting is one-off. So our treasury managers, treasury advisors, are expecting interest rates to reduce next year, and so obviously we won't get that one-off exceptional income in future years. So those are the main points about the purpose of the report and what's in the report. Are there any questions?
Thank you, James. Over to the committee.
Can I just ask one simple question, if I may?
Yeah, over to you, Castle Sankey. Hey, Councillor. James?
Yes, yeah, we can include that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. Yes.
Very briefly, I mean, there's always scope for variation between what the advisers say and what absolutely happens in real life, because no matter how professional they are, no one can foretell the future. And they're varying opinions, if you look at the internet, about the potential movement in interest rates over the next few years. One of the things I would say is Link often are prepared to provide Treasury management training sessions to audit committees in this particular area when some of these things can be explored and interrogated. So if this committee finds that useful, that might be something we could set up with them next year.
Yeah, sounds good. Councillor Huckabee.
A follow-on question. It's true that every rise in interest rates increases East Attleborough Council's dividends, but it also has a negative effect on everybody else's debt. Now, the council at the moment is trying to assist in the cost of living crisis, call it what you want, by using some of the funds to actually target those that are in desperate needs. So although there's beneficial points in sight here, there's also negative points, perhaps not so clearly defined, that you're taking from Peter to pay Paul, in a sense, although it's a more circuitous route. Now, I don't know where I should sort of mention these things. I've got it written on the actual statement of accounts update. Now, our accounts
are
audited.
To just come back to the item, this item.
Yeah, coming back to it, yeah. Can you give assurances? You specified that it's people's best guess or experts' best guess. You know, this was the sort of language pre-2008 that they couldn't predict the bankers' crisis and what have you, although I knew about it in 2005-06 from people who worked in the oil industry. It was eminently predictable by some people. Now, they introduced what was known as a stress test against banks. The value of external audits is obviously not much, because today we've had Nottingham going to receivership or bankruptcy and what have you. Now, in every case where councils have gone into bankruptcy, Section 114, is it, protection, each of those has had their accounts audited and approved, even though eventually, soon after, they've gone into bankruptcy. So I'm thinking that just like the bankers needed extra disciplines and what have you, if we're to say that just because we've got an independent audit review that's signifying this, that or the other is okay, to really prevent this council from getting into bad areas, then we need some sort of stress test which is more severe or accepts a more severe economic climate than the external auditors are willing to apply. Am I asking for too much?
Right. I think if I could just say, I think one reason, and I may be wrong, one of the reasons why the 21-22 accounts are delayed, because the government upped the ante for external audit. They wanted to cover more of the council to try and be a stress test against that. It's taken its while to filter through the audit systems, we can see, but they have applied some more controls to try and make that more rigorous for local authorities. Whether it's enough, I can't comment, but they are trying to do something. But I'll hand over to colleagues if you've got anything to add.
Thank you. So, when the first priority of the council when it makes investments of surplus cash is the security of that cash. So with its advisors, its treasury advisors, it identifies counterparties that have got high credit ratings. That are the most secure. So that is the policy, and that's a key reason we have the advisors is to use that assessment in order to ensure the security of the investments. So from a treasury management policy point of view, it's the counterparties. That we're using, where we're putting the investments, and that's why when we set out a treasury management strategy, it clearly sets out what those counterparties are and why they are chosen. And as part of this mid-year outturn report, I've reported on the fact that all the activities that have taken place in the 6 months have adhered to that policy. So that's the key issue about ensuring the security of the investments.
Thank you, James.
I was going to ask about the amount of debt left. So it says that we have 32.7 million of cash reserves. Is there long term debt and short term funds? Is there a cap on the interest rate on that debt, or is it varied?
So. When we take out the borrowing initially, we do it for a period of time. So we would normally only repay that borrowing based on the period of time that we've agreed when we've done it. Obviously, we've done the borrowing in the past, so we don't know what our cash positions will always be in the future. So that's why we've still got external debt because of external debt that we took out previously when from a point of view of the whole cash flow we needed additional cash. It's not necessarily in our interest to repay that debt as soon as we've got cash available. The reason being that we might have to pay an additional charge in order to do that. But what you'll have picked up in the report is there was an opportunity that arose in April of this year where it was worthwhile as repaying that external debt. So that was done with the advantage then that we won't have to pay as much external interest going forward. But there won't be that many more opportunities to do that. But the fact that it's been done is positive, especially given where we are at the moment with us being able to get where interest rates are. Thanks.
Yeah, I haven't been on the committee for several years. You're absolutely right. And if I think, didn't you, Councillor Sankey, didn't you ask on a couple of occasions why we weren't paying the debt off when we could, and it was because it wasn't the right time to pay those debts off because we would have had extra charges and it just wasn't worth it. But now you can see, because interest rates are going up and we're making a substantial and more money with our investments, and obviously if we've got debts that we could pay off, it was prudent to pay that off because obviously the interest rates on debt has gone up as well. So, you know, I think it's been a very good decision that we made in April to do that. and it's been prudent now that we have extra investments, extra money coming in for our investment. Now, Councillor, you alluded to the fact that the council, well, some members of the council had said that they wanted to have capital financing requirements to do some projects which may not or may happen. Yeah, this committee isn't there to tell the administration what they've got to spend their money on. That's something else. What we're here to do is make sure that that what has been spent correctly, and that the accounts are properly audited. But so it's not for us to, whatever the capital financing requirement is of the council, is not down to our committee to make those commitments. We can challenge them, but it's not for us to do that. Is that correct, Steve?
Yes, I'm certainly about the debt. Yeah, we paid up, I think, about $4.5 billion, of which we got a benefit of about 170,000 over the life of the debt, I think is to my recognition. I do all the comments you say. It just makes sense, and that's what we did. And I also noticed in the, as the Treasury report just said, section 3.4.1, the Treasury Trust does not anticipate any borrowing, which again, I think is good news that we're not trying to borrow. At this time when it's pretty expensive. I agree with
comments you said,
Thanks.
Yeah, and Steve, as well, the capital financing requirements.
Can we use the chair, please? He's right there.
Excuse me, Councillor Hadley.
We should go through the chair.
If the chairman wishes to run his meeting, he will ask me to go to the chair. I don't need you to remind me. Thank you very much.
Obviously, I do.
Thank you very much.
I'm just trying to... So the capital funding requirement isn't down for us to set, is it, Councillor Sankey?
Councillor
Sankey? No, it's not. We're there to challenge and checks and balances. Thank you,
Chair.
Any else come for that meeting,
Mackie? Yeah, taking that to reprimand to heart. credibility of investment, then. Let's start with that, which is, I think, within the confines of our questioning abilities. I for a long time have questioned whether or not there should be certain investments going into carbon producing environments, because these, in my estimation, are dodgy investments. Now, a lot of people think that this is years there's no need to rush to these considerations. I actually take a different view, and I think very soon we will see people begin to respond. This council got caught with its investments in Iceland. Do you remember that?
Very well.
And everybody was shock horror. What's happened and all what? This is because these things arrive very quickly, a product of catastrophe of mathematics, where people contain their efforts and whatever until such time as they see a signal, and then they all dump straight away, and this catches people out. Now the same is going to happen with those investments which are in sort of filthy investments. So I question that as a prudent way to invest the money. Now I've been told that we can't divest ourselves of these particular filthy environments or investments, because they're intertwined so deeply with other people's that the means of extraction is so long-winded and difficult that we won't even consider it. So in that sense, if that is a true reflection of where we're putting our investments, given the fact that as a councillor I must protect the investments of my electorate, I am concerned on their behalf that we are making investments where we shouldn't be making investments, or we're not looking at the quality of those investments with regard to long-term future climate change operations. So your response to that would be, no, it's not that difficult to get those investments out. or you might respond and say, no, we're not looking at it. But the question is, you were satisfied with the validity of that investment?
The sort of criteria around that is set out in the Treasury strategy. What that sets out, which is brought to audit committee for scrutiny and then to council, is the strategy which is around the security of that investment and then the yield. So that's the strategy that's set out. By statute, we can't invest. We invest in things like gilts and money market funds and with banks in terms of investments, lending out money for it to be repaid, rather than any other companies. That's very much set out in the regulation that there would be rules that would have financial implications that would be difficult for the council if we were to look at other types of investments. So the choices that have been made are in part set out by the strategy, but that's also informed by some of the wider rules, which mean that we invest in things like banks and gilts in short term money market funds, and so we're not investing in companies or other types of entities or specific industries, if that makes sense.
Yeah, if I can just add to that what James has said here. I mean, it's an extremely good question and very topical. A few points on this. I mean, the first thing is what we're trying to do here, and I think has been done quite successfully in the past, is low-risk investment strategy. Now, you did mention the Icelandic banking crisis, and I think a lot of chief financial officers were rather spooked by that event when 25% of local authorities roughly had invested in Icelandic banks. I will say I was at that time the finance director of a London borough, and without being triumphalist, we had no investments in Icelandic banks, and we had avoided them because we felt that the return was too good to be true at that time. So, I mean, just to be clear, what James and myself are doing in terms of managing the treasury management is taking a low-risk approach, which at first point protects taxpayers' money. What I'd also say about, I mean, you make a very good point about the green agenda and climate change. As James has said, most of what we're doing actually is building societies, banks, sometimes other local authorities. Now, it's not to say that they don't have exposure to investments that aren't green. However, that may be secondary or third exposure, well down, if you like, the value chain. And there is a difficulty to actually identify it. But with treasury management of district councils, we're largely going into those sorts of investments with banks and building societies and some money market funds. I think where what is called ESG, environmental, social and governance investment, applies to treasury management, but far more so it applies to pension fund investments, which of course the county are doing. So in a sense, I think there is perhaps a limit we can do in that area, but we will always be rigorous about, if you like, the green agenda in terms of investments that we are making. So I hope that's kind of helpful to give you a picture of the approach that we're trying to adopt. Well, yes, and some of us did think that at the particular time, and choices were made. Obviously, you know, sometimes people look to achieve what they describe as alpha returns, and, you know, apparently the Icelandic option did offer that, but we all know what happened. And
London Borough, which everyone has here at the time.
Yes, it was actually the borough of Hounslow, but just mention that.
Thank you. Just heard a comment about climate change and the perhaps perceived elements of unknown, and your explanation supplemented that thought in my mind. But what it sparked me to ask about is the situation regarding reserves. Perhaps for any unforeseen massive expenditure to deal with climate change, perhaps. So earmarked reserves, general reserves. Could you just weave something into the conversation tonight about the situation of the reserves at the council?
Yes, I mean, again, a good question. I mean, in terms of why do we have reserves is, which may appear to be blindingly obvious, but I mean, I tend to like to see it a little bit like if you're driving a car, it's like having the air in the tyre. It gives you the opportunity to spread expenditure, limit your risk in the case of unforeseen events which aren't included in the budget. So that's why we have them. Now, what is the appropriate level of reserves? Well, that is a matter for each individual authority to determine. We have 1.3 million in our general reserve. I would say that is a sustainable level, but it's not an affluent level. We have significantly more, of course, in earmarked reserves, which have been identified for specific things. I think, given the size of the authority, our reserve strategy has been reasonable, but it is always subject to review, and members will take a view. I would say when general reserves fall below what a reasonable level might be, you are likely to get comments from the external auditor about the risk of the authority, because if there is an unforeseen event which isn't, say, covered by government schemes like the Bellwind scheme, which deals with things like hurricanes and whatever, you will have a position where you might potentially be running out of money, and if you haven't made provision in your reserves, you've actually been irresponsible. So what we're trying to do, and on advising members, is getting to a reasonable position, but every authority is in a different case. So I once worked for another central London authority that had £50 million in the general reserve, which was a very healthy reserve situation. Some may say some of that money might have been spent. I would say down at 1.3 million, that is a fairly modest general reserve, but a reasonable one.
Can you classify it as not a percentage of revenue, for example? Is it a guideline? Can we is it publicly available? Can we benchmark against other local authorities?
In terms of benchmarking against other local authorities, absolutely we can do that, and I can provide some figures and charts which show us against a family of district councils. So that is quite an easy one. Very good question. Well, why are we making these judgments on, some might say, a finger in the air? Why don't they say that, say, 1.5% of net revenue expenditure is a reasonable level for a general reserve? The Audit Commission, which members will know is now no more, back in the distant past, did give a sort of indication, which I think was about 1.5 from recollection, This was quite some years ago. That is the only indication of an appropriate reserve level that has been published by any public body that I'm aware of. I'm fairly sure about that one.
So, probably going back to the point that the Chair's raised, we've got debt, actual external debt that we've taken out because of previous decisions when our cash flow was running low, and then the decision whether to repay it is based on what the penalty charge might be compared to what we would have to charge in the normal process.
Yeah.
So at the moment, after having repaid back some of that external debt this year, it's actually around 6.4 million. The investments that represent the surplus cash at this current time, and our debt was taken out a long time ago, is much higher than that. So we're doing it in two ways, one of which I just mentioned about actually paying out the external debt. We also take out, if you like, kind of nominal borrowing. When we have a capital program and we don't finance all that expenditure, we incur a kind of nominal borrowing for that capital program. We might not do it in practice because we've got all this other cash around and we consider all our cash together. But specifically, we have that legacy amount where we spent money on the capital programme but haven't directly financed it in year from things like capital grants. So exactly as you're saying, the council is reducing that. So it's set out in the Treasury strategy to repay more than it actually has to reduce it. So the council is both trying to reduce that nominal borrowing that it's taken out for the capital programme, and that's been its policy for this current financial year. And as we said, it has actually repaid the external debt as well. So that is what's going on at the moment. Of course, the budget will. For 24-25 will be considered in February, and the overall kind of scope of the capital programme will be decided then, and then obviously the funding below it, which will then lead to a new Treasury management strategy for 24-25, which will be built around what that budget is that's been set.
I think James has explained it well. I mean, I wouldn't say that automatically holding debt is necessarily a bad thing, because the majority of authorities to fund their capital programme do incur debt. And of course, the government has the Public Works Loan Board, which provides loans at a relatively a cheap level to local authorities, generally below the market. So it's not automatically a bad thing, and indeed, of course, as we know, central government carries rather a large amount of debt as well, and traditionally has. So it's generally thought that, you know, debt can be a good thing when you're trying to do capital works and improve the environment and the community and all those things, and it helps to fund those very good initiatives that we do. What I'd like to do on that one, I can't immediately answer that question. The general rule that is applied both to pension funds but also treasury management is that you invest to maximise return to the benefit of the council budget and ultimately the community and the taxpayer. So, I mean, there can be instances where you have specific schemes which invest in specific things in areas, and certainly other authorities I've worked for have done that. But if we can come back to you with the detail of that.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Of course.
Entrepreneurial efforts, thoughts, whatever, might think that, well, that one is not coming, it's not coming anytime soon. It's going to curtail our activities as a service. Should we not think about developing our own resource groups? And in that sense, there are many opportunities. What I can think of is the building of homes for people. There seems to be a huge need for homes in this particular area. And the investment, entrepreneurial investment, is taking place by others, but not by yourselves. Has there ever been a consideration that there are certain types of investments which would pass the government's BDI, that would generate cash streams, which would compensate for the fact that that central government has taken away what it traditionally used to provide?
I mean, this has been a subject of much debate. There's no doubt, you're absolutely right, the level of resourcing through revenue support grants has in comparison to the rest of the public sector and inflation generally has gone down, and if you look at the situation from 2010-11 on to where we are now, funding for local government generally underperforms the general trend, sadly. So that is true, undoubtedly true. And when we look at district councils, they've tended to underperform the average allocations for councils because the allocations have tended to go for social care and related issues and not those services that we do. So, I mean, The answer is, are we rigorous enough in generating our own income? Well, we will be having budget discussions between now and council tax setting in February where we will consider those things. Yes, you can do major schemes. I think one of the things you might look at a bit before that is things like fees and charges and those sort of things where we have choice over our own income in some instances. The caution I would emphasise, there are a number of well-documented authorities where people have attempted to deal with the reduction of resources by coming up with various schemes. Thurrock Council and the wind farms is one. Croydon, near to where I live, the building of a hotel, which proved to be not as wise as it might have been. So you have to look at the risk profile of the authority, and a lot of things requiring investment, they need to come from a position of financial strength, not an avoidance to do proper revenue budgeting, which may be difficult, and I'm conscious that, you know, some of this with members, you know, is difficult decisions that we have to do, but resources are finite. And I'd always advise against things that look like an easy way out, but perhaps increase our risk profile by too much.
Thanks.
Thank you. So I'll go through East Staffordshire's report on the statement of accounts, and Stephen will update you around the Grant Thornton external report. So the report sets out where we are in terms of the 2022-23 accounts. So they've been put on the council's website at the end of October, and they're now available for public inspection, and that inspection period will end in early December. So the report sets out some of the key messages that have come out from the accounts. Obviously the important part of doing it is to tell us what our financial position was at 31st of March 2023. So we've just been talking about the earmark reserves, and the balance of those was just over 32 million at the end of March. And again, the general fund balance, which we've been talking about, was 1.3 million. The council spent 8 million on capital expenditure during the 22-23 financial year, which has then increased the value of the long-term infrastructure that it holds. As we've talked about the actual external debt that was held, which was at the level of over 10 million the 31st of March, and then, as we said, in April we've paid 4.5 million of that back in April. The accounts have shown a big change in one of the items, which is what's called the pension fund liability. So there's a comparison done in the accounts with the pension promises we've made to staff to pay pensions over a period of time, and then the investments that we've set aside. those two elements are balanced off against each other. The way that's done is looking into a long way into the future, and is done by actuaries, and is quite volatile and depends on the economic assumptions that they make. As you know, the economic climate has changed a lot recently, and that's worked its way through in terms of the pension, and meant that it's shown as a big reduction. I think the report sets out that isn't going to give us much significance in terms of the actual employer contributions that we pay. So it's a value of reliability that's shown that does swing quite a lot between years, and it's not going to make or have any impact in terms of setting the budget. The report also says that there's a separate fund that we hold where we collect council tax and business rates, and then after estimating how much that will be at the start of the year, we use that estimate to give out the precepts to the county, the police and the fire, and that ended up with a surplus at the end of last financial year, which is a positive position. The order is well up and we're kind of more or less in the middle of it at the moment. Having talked to the external audit manager today, they haven't got any significant issues to report at this stage, and they're continuing the process of their audit. The report also updates you around where we are on the 21-22 accounts. So I think the position that was last reported to you is that you were waiting around further assurance from the external auditors of the Staffordshire Pension Fund as how it affects our pension fund accounts. So what's happened is the 21-22 audit has sort of gone through its process, but unfortunately, because there's been a delay, it's then meant more figures. We've moved forward around things like some of the assumptions that go into pension funds. So because of that, then our auditors, Grant Thornton, have restarted effectively the work that they've done on the pension fund. And so in order to complete that, they've asked questions of the external auditors of Staffordshire County Council's pension fund. So that is the one thing that's been holding up the completion of the 21-22 audit. I think the report sets out that at the time that the report was written, the latest information was we were going to get that response back from EY in early December or about now. And the latest, unfortunately, is that's now been put back into January, so you might want to ask some questions about that. What I will say is that apart from this pension fund issue, the external audit manager has confirmed that they've completed all their work on the 21-22 accounts. Further, that the partner has done their review of the accounts, barring the pension fund issue. So we've got to the point where there is just this one issue, but nevertheless, I'm sure you'll want to ask questions about it, which is still yet to be resolved, which is holding up the completion of the 21-22 accounts. So having set the scene, shall I leave it there and ask if there's any questions?
Yeah, thank you, James.
sure about that. That is a well tried and tested process. But reading the audit report, we're now talking of not being signed off from the external auditors till the end of February. And given we've got another meeting at the beginning of February, it makes sense to actually discuss it then, because it's pointless delegating it to the chair when the auditors are saying it's not going to be signed up till the end of February.
Yeah.
I've got a few other points. We did have in our June meeting, we did have a number of discussions there, pretty much the same conversation. We have only valuation outstanding, and the chair did suggest that to keep everybody informed, that we'd have updates, the committee would be kept up to date with progress and issues. We've not received anything. Then we've come to the September meeting, where we've had the same conversation. It will be signed up at the next meeting, which is effectively this meeting. And we've gone and come again. We've had this meeting has basically said, hopefully we'll get signed up for the next one or the one after that. It's a bit like Groundhog Day, personally. I don't get a lot of confidence that it will eventually get signed off. I've got another issue around the percentage, the audit report that the external auditors. Do you want to pick that up now? Because they're interlinked, or I can pick it up after the external auditors give their reports. I'm going to have to pick a couple of points up on those.
Sorry, councillor. Yes, should we do it afterwards, so it's all linked into the context of external audit. That's okay with you. If I'm okay to come back to a couple of those points. So I fully agree on it being delegated to me, and officers tell you I made the same point to them. I think given these accounts have taken a bit of a long and winding road, I think it's good governance to come back to the committee. It's also I asked for the training last week to be cancelled, because I think there's no point as getting acquainted with the process of the accounts if we're not going to look at them for another 2 or 3 months. So I completely agree. Should come back to committee in February. So agreed on that, Councillor Sankey. On the updates, I believe that Lisa Turner, did send some updates, certainly after the June meeting. I don't know, I think we all share the same frustrations about this not being resolved. If there was something that I thought ESBC wasn't doing, I hope you trust I would raise it, Councillor Sankey. I just think all we can do is keep the feet to the fire with Ernst & Young via Grant Thornton. Speaking to colleagues, do you think there is anything we can do in terms of an update? Are we literally waiting for them to come back to this questionnaire? Is there any interim things we can do to try and push that along any further?
Chair, if I may, I get it's to do with the pension fund, but I don't understand why other... Right, so for example, I believe South Stats and Tamworth, to name but two, have signed off their accounts. So I struggle to understand why our cabinet member and why our 151. 151 I can understand because we had a lot of change. So I did struggle with that element of the bit, because it does seem as if doing the pension contributions is a fairly, I would call it, mechanistic is disrespectful, and I apologise, it's not the words I'm trying to think of, but it is not delving into some of the complexities of some of the, once you've done it for one authority, it's very similar to do this for other authorities as well. So I struggle to understand the rationale compared to other parts that the auditors have done. But I'll pick up the other parts later. So, that's my comments.
Thanks, Cassie. Thank you. I'll tell you a point that some have, but I believe it's some other local authorities attached to the county still haven't as well. Are they from within?
We are not the only authority affected by this. it's worth me saying, Councillor Sankey, that I actually raised this particular issue at the Staffordshire Treasurer's meeting, which was about a week and a half ago, and I expressed the concern, and a number of the other treasurers did as well, because they're caught in the same situation. I mean, without perhaps getting too granular in this, different external auditors have different approaches to gaining assurance. So whether there is an issue here, particularly with the Jeep Grant Thornton approach, because they have essentially asked for certain assurances from Ernst & Young, for the auditors of the pension fund, and basically those assurances haven't been completed yet. So it may be that other audit firms approach this in a different way, but that is the situation we find ourselves in. So it may not be universal, but it's certainly not just the Staffordshire who are experiencing this delay.
And I would agree with you, but the first line of financial statement audit from the external auditors, we have not yet completed the work of the financial. We're waiting yet, but, and it does, in that report, does talk about lack of resource in the staff, finance resource in the staff as one of the issues that has caused this problem. Also, back in the June meeting, it was, you know, Lisa did actually, I listened to it, did actually say around about 50% of them had got their accounts through at the June meeting. So we do seem to be, if that was right, it does seem to be, we are struggling at the back end of this.
Well, as I said, we are not the only authority affected. If Lisa said it was 50%, I'm sure she was correct. But there are authorities that other authorities that are affected. I think so. You know, I get the point you are making on this. I think. Though I would say that we are attempting to pressure, but there is a difficulty because we do not have a contractual relationship with Ernst & Young. Their contractual relationship is with the county, so I can only make representations to the county to bring pressure to bear and resolve this. I think also the other point I wanted to make, Councillor, was where they're saying that there were delays. We're not denying that there were issues in preparing the accounts, but from my understanding, the definitive thing that is holding up signature on 21-22 is this specific issue with the pensions fund, and some of those other issues that may have been around in June this year have been resolved by the work that the team have done.
And if I may, Chair, I fully agree what you're saying. My
I know it's unfortunate they're not here tonight, but could we perhaps ask Grant Thornton to clarify that point or give us a short...
Yeah, of course we can.
Yeah. Okay, anybody else? Councillor Huckabee.
Yeah,
Yeah. I want to be absolutely clear about it. I said we do not have a relationship with their external auditor. That does not mean we do not have a relationship with Staffordshire in their role as their duty as managing the pension fund. So I want to be very clear about what I'm saying there. I mean, in terms of the way that fund is managed, in terms of its performance, its governance, where it's making its investments, that will ultimately be done through the Staffordshire Pension Fund Committee, which obviously we can take an interest in. Every year they will be producing an annual report of that committee, which we can comment on, either from the point of view of the council generally or the audit committee in particular. So that's how it is done. I mean, whether, in a sense, it's a matter of judgment of whether members are satisfactory of how Staffordshire are doing that, but that's how it's done, and through the Staffordshire Pension Trustees.
Observation of the money that is invested on behalf of employees in Staffordshire into almost an external arm's length pension fund, we have an insight into the veracity and validity of that pension fund. The fact that we're waiting for the audit to be signed by our auditor, who's reliant on the pension fund's auditor, is the key to it. There's nothing below that other than the fact that we're in a queue waiting to be audited, and that queue is quite long and quite extraneous. So we actually are confident that there is no untoward audit comments going to come forward from Ernest Young to Grant, whatever.
We are not in a position to preempt essentially what happens here is a questionnaire is sent from Grant Thornton to Ernst & Young and the results of that questionnaire provide the assurance that they require to add to the process of signing off our accounts. So I cannot say what Ernst & Young might say that would cause concern to Grant Thornton. I think, you know, they would be in a position to do that and explain that as part of their audit work. But I think it's fair to say at this point in time we have no knowledge of any particular concerns with the pension fund. But in a sense, that is the point of the work. The point is to gain audit assurance, and that's what Grant Thornton are trying to do as our auditors. So it is a little esoteric, but that is as I understand it.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else on the statement of accounts? Okay, thank you. That takes me on to the second part, look at the Grant Thornton report. Your best job to moonlight as an
Yes, and I was fortunate enough once to work for the National Audit Office. But, members have been circulated with the Grant Thornton report here. There is a degree of frustration in the sector generally, and one of the things that they do identify in their report is that generally in the sector, I think 22-23, only 12% of accounts were prepared and audited on time. So in a sense that these issues that are occurring and issues, I'm not denying that we may well have had in the finance team earlier in the year, are inherent across the whole sector, and I think that's something that Grant Thornton are saying in their report. And, you know, this is being addressed at central government level to hopefully improve this. What I would say, and perhaps Grant Thornton probably wouldn't necessarily agree with this, but having rather been on the other end of the table and having to deal with Grant Thornton audits, and indeed Ernst & Young and other clients I've worked for, there is a considerable amount of process involved with the audits, particularly in, for example, property valuations. And one does wonder if this gradual increase in process with perhaps not a great increase in resource has actually added to the crisis that there undoubtedly is in public sector audit. And, you know, perhaps a degree of simplification of some of what is done in the audit process might include the timeliness of this, but that's just an observation. But clearly, if only 12% of authorities can achieve their closure and audit on time, which is what Grant Thornton are telling us in this document, it does suggest to me that there is something inherently not as good as it could be in this space.
I don't have the skills of Councillor Sankey, and as he's been several years in learning to be able to probe them. So I start off from basically.
Mm.
Whenever there's an issue, there is something causing that issue. And I guess it's my job as part of the audit committee, as part of the scrutiny committee, whatever, to probe, to see whether or not I can identify what that situation is. I remember Philip Green, when he bankrupted VHS, suddenly appeared this huge black hole in the pension scheme where there was, 700 million missing. You know, how do these things happen? They happen because of people's lazy confirmation of figures and whatever, you're not doing the depth analysis necessary, whatever, so these things get passed on and on and on. And this, although I'm not alleging that there's anything wrong, because I don't have the information, all I'm trying to do is see whether or not those representatives of the system that come before me, which is have the answers for why there is not a smooth transfer of information. So I apologise if I appear to be a little bit pushy.
Not at all. I mean, audit committees are there to apply rigour, and you know that's what we're doing here in this meeting tonight, and it's entirely right and proper. And in a sense, if they don't do that, they're not doing their job. So you know, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, just a short thing. I noticed there's some things were due in November and they're overdue. How confident are we that they're going to get done as soon as possible? I don't know, you don't actually work for Grant Thornton, but you know, we want some sort of reassurance that, so here we are. I know they're only just overdue, but how confident are we they're going to get done ASAP, please?
I mean, I think one of the things that we're trying to do in this interim period, pending the arrival of your new Section 151 officer, is we're trying to reset the finance team. We did an appointment, an internal appointment to replace the post held by someone members may recall, Anya Murray, who is quite well known, who has left the authority. So we've done an internal appointment for that, and we're looking at other internal appointments that we can do to encourage our own staff, but also ensure that posts are filled and we have the capacity to deal with the whole range of financial issues, including the accounts and audit ones.
Chair, can I pick up a question? If I may, I still like to pick up. I did mention the 12% you mentioned. That's 12% that that failed, that didn't hit the December 22 deadline. It would be interesting to know what, how many percent didn't hit 6 months on, and in our case, it's looking like 15 months later. So what percentage of the organisations are going to be reporting their, signing their accounts off 15 months? Because I think we're going to be definitely in the last quartile by a long way by this time. The way the report's written was, is, oh, only 12% have done it. That's correct. But that's back in December last year. It's now 12 months late, and it's going to be at least 15 months late. And I don't think, I'd like to know what percentage of the organisations are that late as well, if I may, Chair. And I would also like to pick up, when we can, on the points that they made around that it is our, you know, low capacity in the finance teams and the accounting issues, historic accounting. I'd like us to know what those historic accounting issues are. Yes, we know about the valuations on that. My final point on that is, I'm pleased that you've done an internal appointment, but that doesn't address the capacity issue. Just promoting somebody to be brought from one desk to another and given different responsibility doesn't increase the capacity of the team. And certainly I know the team was struggling capacity-wise before, and we've lost, you know, a 151 officer, an acting 151 officer, and a accounting, whatever our new title was. We've lost three very senior people, and yes, we've got yourselves in interim, and to be fair, as part of the interview process, which I support that. But it just begs the question, you must make sure we've got capacity in this team. So I think that might be another issue for the longer term, because we can't have the external auditor saying low capacity in the finance team and the failure to deal with historic issues, when I think, to be blunt, I think it's more to do with the external auditors than it is to our team. But I don't want to let them off the hook, if that makes sense, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. A couple of points. So, the number of councils with outstanding accounts, have you got a channel to find that out?
Yes, yeah, we can do that, and Grant Thornton will probably help us, but we can give you some numbers on that.
I was going to ask the same question. If you can interpret it, we'll ask them to clarify the historic issues comment. That would be really useful.
Yeah.
I think you made the point about whether the questionnaire, we're just hypothesising that the questionnaire could be an issue. I'm not saying it is, not saying it isn't, but is it worth getting a reflection from them as to whether their other external audit is progressing on time?
Yes, yeah.
So really, how successful they are at getting those over the line?
Yeah. And there are also a couple of typos in the report, which I won't bother referring to, but they were actually referring to sign off in February 23, which I'm sure they mean February 24, but I won't nitpick on that one.
I think I spotted that in the date of the report, it's maybe November 23, February 23, but there was something,
Yeah. I think just on the point about the capacity, I think you're absolutely right, Councillor Sankey. I don't think what we're saying is we'll make internal appointments and it will all be all right, because you're absolutely right, as people move up at the bottom there will be a gap. So we are looking to try and encourage perhaps people at the start of their career at the bottom end of the structure, bringing in apprentices and trainees and training them up, which I think has worked quite well here in the past. So we're not ignoring that. I think what we're trying to avoid is, I mean, obviously you are sitting here looking at two interim managers. I'm very keen not to increase the number and the proportion of interim managers overall as compared to in-house staff. So that is what we're looking at. On the other hand, we are appointing people because they've gone through a rigorous and competitive process and they have convinced us that they have the necessary skills to go to the next stage. And if they don't convince us of that, we would not promote them. So we're trying to take a balanced approach here, but we are conscious about the pressure of interim management costs on the revenue budget.
Thank you.
So there's an analysis of what those reserves are in the account, and we can look at that note, if you like, across previous years, and see the levels of each individual reserve. So they're analysed by type and purpose. It might just be worth mentioning that some of those reserves are grants that we've received. So we've received a grant to be used for a specific purpose, and we're holding it to make sure we use it for what we've been asked to apply it against. So it's not the case that it all originates from our own funds. But there is a sort of very clear breakdown in the accounts, a clear note that sets out exactly what makes up that sum, what the individual elements are that go into it. It goes across a few years, and obviously you can look back at as many accounts as you want and see as many years as you want, showing you how those reserves have moved over time. I'd probably just mention one of the points we raised earlier, which is that the extra interest income at the moment we're getting has meant that we're underspent at the moment in terms of the budget, but that isn't necessarily going to continue. In terms of the funding we'll have available in the future, there'll be an announcement in December around the local government settlement, and that will probably be a one-year announcement, and obviously that will then inform the budget process. We don't know what that will be until we have that settlement. So there are unknowns looking ahead.